Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Not the result we wanted to look back on, but we're going to have a little chat about it anyway. And again, just look at the wider picture of things, following on from all the debacle was one word for it, that happened late last week before the game. So, joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith, as always, Gareth Barker. Evening.
Good evening. Good evening. A Wise Men Say first tonight.
Okay. Elaborate.
Just discussing a defeat in Newcastle.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. Literally never had to do this before.
No.
Yeah. Never mind. Joining us to do that is James Hunter as well. Evening, James.
Good evening. Good evening. Did someone mention something about a derby? I don't recall. Are you sure? I know not what of you speak, you know?
Well, but you would have had to reflect on derby defeats over your long, illustrious...
Oh, yes.
time you've had following Sunderland, but luckily
not
for us...
Well,
the podcast been going 10 years, a decade, and we haven't had the displeasure of doing it until now. So we'll do a little bit on that, and I think probably just have a chat about just where we are generally in terms of where the club are at and where they go from here, and reflect on some of the decisions that have been made that probably could and should have been avoided. Right. Gareth stuck to his guns and principles and didn't go. Credit to him for that. So it means he'll have a slightly different experience to the one that me and you have, James. Yeah. Anybody want to start on the performance? You know, clearly acknowledging the difference in class. Was there anything in the performance that we feel let down by?
Who wants
I should
have allocated somebody.
Yeah,
to
you
that,
did.
But,
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
I know.
Good
I just
threw the floor open, didn't you? You've only been doing it for
11 years.
Yeah. I think you know, everybody knows that there's going to be a difference in quality between the two teams. You know, that's, you know, clear for everyone to see. If not, Sunderland would be in the Premier League, wouldn't they? So the question is, how do you bridge that gap? You know, and you can do it through, you know, working harder than the other team, running harder than the other team, running faster than the other team, you know, effort and commitment and such have you. You have to try and find a way, you know, do it through tactics, through, you know, some sort of tactical tweak. There's got to be some way of bridging that gap. And Sunderland were unable to find it. You know, they were unable to do that. I mean, there was no lack of effort, but there wasn't the extra effort needed to bridge the gap with a Premier League quality team. So it all felt very disappointing at the end. It felt like they hadn't given it their best shot, but they hadn't given it the shot that everybody hoped they had. They hadn't made Newcastle work as hard as they should have for their win.
I think I look at this two ways, and I think there's blame on the players, and I think there's blame on the head coach or the management of the game as well. I was always worried about this stylistically, and I said it from the start. I've got, you know, I watch Newcastle regularly, and it's the type of team we struggle, and exactly what I thought would happened. They are so big compared to us, and in the middle of the park, Joe Linton in particular just bullied us, didn't let us get near it, and then they turn over quite quickly. I actually thought our defensive shape was decent, and we didn't give a host of chances away like we do in the Championship sometimes. All three goals could have been avoided and probably should have been avoided. Defensive mistakes. But a couple of things. Firstly, which we'll get onto the management and our coaching, I think probably could have done more to counteract what was happening and reacted to what was happening on the day. As much as anything, I'm a bit let down with some of the players. Gareth, do you think it might have been different watching it through the telly? But I just didn't think we were brave enough on the ball. And I think we choked a little bit. I think there was one incident in the first half. We had a free kick, and Pritchard was standing over, and Jack Clark was available on the left-hand side. And instead of, if this was a championship game against any team in the championship, he would have released that ball and given it straight away. But because Kieran Trippier did this little sort of dummy, as it to say, I know what you're about to do, and I'll go over there, mind, I'll challenge him, Pritchard didn't give him it. And I just think, like, that's one small example. But for me, it was just symbolic of the whole game in terms of, like, if you don't feel confident to give your best player the ball because somebody might go over and try and take it off them, then what is the point, seriously? Like, where are we at with that? And as decent off the ball, shape wise, defensively, I thought we were. I just thought the players weren't brave enough on the day. And I think that they bottled it a little bit, personally, is my opinion.
I
Don't know if
thought it
that
was
come
a.
across to you, Gareth, or not, or whether that, I would imagine the telly just looked like we were just chasing shadows all game, and that's all there was to it.
Well, I put, gave my opinion on the social media after the game.
Well, some of our listeners aren't on social media, Gareth, so
Well,
I'll elaborate for
I
you.
just thought it was. I just thought we were meek and we were overwhelmed and a bit brainless, really. I just thought, it's all very well the manager coming out after the game and saying it's a learning experience or whatever. And we've seen like some of the players maybe aren't as good as they think they are almost. It was like some comments like that. And I was kind of thinking, It was like, think, well, how good are you, mate? I mean, you're the one who's in control of the situation to try and influence the game and make the changes during the game and on the fly. Now, so within the first 10, 12 minutes, Dan Burn's been roasted by Trehearne. He was not exactly lightning. And then he got.
He's hardly marauding fullback, is he?
No. Then he got turned a couple of times by Russell. And I'm thinking, okay. And then nothing else went down that side. And you're thinking, why aren't. Trippier's on Clark. So why not pop Clark, put him on Burn? And then they're going, well. All right then, what do we do now? Are they going to swap? Are they going to swap Trippier to left back and put Burn to right back? Probably not.
No, Dan Burn's not playing right back,
No,
no.
so give them something to think about. You could rotate the front three. So, put Job up top, put Russell to the left, drop Pritchard into the middle, and put Clark to the right. And then you've also got an outlet in terms if you want to go a bit longer from. Situations where the goalkeeper has the ball instead of playing out all the time, you can mix it up a bit. You can hit somebody a bit t bigger. You can target that right side maybe, and on your goal kicks and put Bellingham and Clark a bit closer together to try and have a bit more of an aerial presence and go longer and try and pick up some pieces. Have Pritchard buzzing about those two to try and pick some pieces up there and try and get the ball in some space in their half rather than trying to play through a press all the time that failed repeatedly. It just felt as though on the fly game management on the pitch and off the pitch. I think on the pitch, I think it would be harsh. I know we've talked about it on the pod before where we said it would be good if players kind of made decisions in games. I think that's less and less likely now the way teams are set up. But I just think the manager really could have at least tried to disrupt because it was almost like going, well, everyone's known for weeks that our only threat. It's like, well, give the ball to Jack Clark and see what happens. Well, I mean, they've watched videos and gone, he's their main threat. Let's just block him out of the game, put four players on him. He was man marked by Trippier. He basically followed him round. So just change it for 10 minutes. Disrupt it. See if you get any change. There's nothing wrong with a line ball every now and then and try and turn, get them turn and run back towards their own goal. Did it a few times and they just cleared it for a throw in and then we can try and build something in their half. But it just felt as though we just had this like scrambled brains. It was like tunnel vision. Like this is what we're going to do. And the defenders.
Didn't bring a sub on 85
No,
minutes.
I mean, the defenders arguably pretty well, generally speaking, for the first, half hour. Although we're under a bit of pressure, they didn't create loads of opportunities. They created some, but not loads. But it obviously the once they scored, it just felt as though, well, that's that then. And the way we were set up in the game was to stop them, and it wasn't, there was no plan in terms of actually finding a way to break them down. When we had the opportunity, it felt like, and as a result, we were never going to get back into the game. And then we give the stupid goal away on, right 30 seconds after the break, and that's that really.
I mean, that was the key. That was the key to it, I think, Gareth. I mean, that first half, Sunderland were not ambitious at all. They didn't show anything going forward whatsoever. And then, of course, you concede that goal. I think Dan Ballard's unfortunate. He's got to make some contact with the ball because he's got Alexander Isaac right behind him. It's really Trehume that dived in at Joe Linton and missed the ball. That's really where the mistake was made. So that's what leads to that one. But then, so you're 1-0 down at half time. Now, I don't know exactly what Michael Beale said to them at half time, but there was never even a chance to see whether that made a difference or not, because within whatever it was, 45 seconds of the second half getting underway, give away the most ridiculous goal from Sunderland's own free kick for offside. Pierre Ekwa trying to play the ball out of his own penalty area and getting caught by Almiron. Just, ludicrous. And at that point, at 2-0, it's not so much a mountain to climb as the whole Himalayas, isn't it? It's a long, long way. And Sunderland did have a spell in the second half. They had 10 minutes or whatever when Ekwa brings a save out of Dubravka with a deflected shot, and Pritchard clips the bar, and then Pritchard has another shot that Dubravka saves. Now, if it's 1-0 at that stage, and you're getting those kind of chances, suddenly the crowd are up, and you think, "Hang on, we're still in this. We're just one long range shot, one deflection away from getting it." But at 2-0, the game had already drifted away. I mean, you can also look at the other side of it, and you can say, "Well, okay, Sunderland could have been more ambitious, but would you have risked a heavier defeat for a little bit more ambition?" It's a valid debate.
But
But I think, like you said, James, it's a time enough though that if they did that at 1-0 down, like you say, it took for us to go 2-0 down before the start. It's suddenly found this bravery to have a go. Now, if they did that at 1-0 and then they went 2-0 down, then yes, they might say, "You know what? Let's get out of this. We're a 2-0,
I agree.
and just sit back." That
I
is where
agree.
I am with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
And I
think
think
even 2-0 isn't 2-0's not the worst result in the world. Then you get that third goal right at the death, which was just a ridiculous foul from Ballard, because Gordon's got such a tight angle. You may as well let him have a shot. He might score, and then you're 3-0 down. But if you're giving away a penalty, you're going to be 3-0 down, really, aren't you? So let's face it. So you'd have been better off letting the lad have his shot from a tight angle rather than give away that penalty in that position. So I think 3-0 was at the outer bounds of acceptability. I think obviously 4-0 is a good hiding. Nobody wants that in a derby. I think 2-0 would have been still painful, still disappointing, don't get me wrong, particularly the manner of it, but people could have walked away and said, "Well, 2-0 against a Premier League team, aha." 3-0 was sort of pushing it a little bit, pushing the bounds of acceptability. Just about the right side of the line, but probably not given the context of the overall performance.
I'd say you could be ambitious without being open, can't you? That's the thing, and that's where it comes to how you organise yourself for the game, isn't it? And giving yourself the best opportunity to win the game the best way you can. Now, I don't think anyone would say, "I didn't expect to win the game." I just expected a bit more of a. It was a platform for some of those players to perform, and they just didn't. The reasons why, were they given the best opportunity to do that? Like Stephen said, did they bottle it a bit? Probably a mixture of things, really. I just think the whole the performance was reflective of the build up of the game. And everything that we suspected would happen happened. The only thing that didn't happen was probably we didn't get battered as heavily as they expected. But everything else around it, from the start to finish, it just went exactly as I thought would happen in terms of we've invited a load of them to a party at our ground, to really sort of come in and just be like, just be it. I felt it was a bit just the whole thing. I found the whole thing humiliating, to be brutally honest, from start to finish. And that goes from off the pitch to on the pitch, and the two things coming together, we gave ourselves and we got drawn at home against them. We basically abandoned all opportunity of home advantage that you get in how we ticketed the game, everything else around that. And you look at some of the tweets from Newcastle United's official account on the on the evening of the game, and they know like we're a laughing stock basically. That's what it felt like. And for them to be tweeting stuff like, thanks for making us feel right at home and all this, it's like everybody knew. So I mean, we can come on if you want to talk about the game more, you can, but the fact that somebody apparently didn't, but everybody else did, knew what was going to happen is still quite unbelievable to me. And I mean that in not unbelievable in the sense that it is, oh, bloody hell, that's unbelievable. Yeah, it was unbelievable in the fact that I don't believe it,
Right,
that somebody didn't know about
well,
it.
right, we are. We'll come on that unless anybody's got anything particularly further that they want to say about the match.
No, I think we can draw a line under the
Don't think people really
match.
want to sit and. I don't think people want to sit and listen to us go on and on and on about the 3-0 defeat in Newcastle. So, have a quick break. Come back, talk about the other stuff.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. Right, we're going to talk about the other stuff now, so you know what we're going to talk about, so listen if you want.
By the way, Stephen, I guess it's worth mentioning that there was a reaction pod. So if you want more analysis about the game itself, that's on the feed now. It took a while for us to get on there because
Good
we didn't know
plug.
there was one, and then it basically didn't land in the email inbox, and then we found it. So yeah,
It
we
was
put
in
that.
mine, but nobody told me it was there, so I didn't know anything
It
about
wasn't in mine, so there you go. Anyway,
it.
I think everyone was just pissed, probably, and
Yeah.
sad and drunk and sad.
Pissed
Classic
in more
combo.
ways than one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have a bit more about it now in light or an expectation that somebody's possibly gonna be, whichever way you look at it, either yinged in front of a great big massive bus, or rightly removed of duties. Don't want to speculate about anything too much. That hasn't been confirmed, of course. I mean, that's the place to start. Gareth's just said there, James, that he doesn't believe that the powers that be. Of course, we're referring to the let's work back, let's work from the front and go backwards, maybe from the memorabilia stuff in the Black Cats Lounge. But everyone knew, and I mean, we sort of. Come across like I'm arrogant here by saying like warn the club or anything, but we had a discussion about this on the podcast weeks ago because we knew it was happening. So are we led to believe that the club didn't, but we did?
So this is Deco Gate, I guess.
Yes, the
We
memorabilia
can,
stuff, yes.
yeah. So I think first of all, it's probably right to say that I think let's forget the football and the game, take that out of it for a minute. Absolutely everything about the preparation for the derby on the part of the club has been an absolute total mess. From the initial decisions taken about the ticketing and, you know, the allocation and handing over the lower north stand to visiting fans, that was bad enough, you know, through to the League One printed on some of the tickets, through to through to obviously the biggest and most, you know, widely known example, which is the, you know, what happened in the Black Cats Bar, which is just absolutely unforgivable. I was thinking to myself, you know, how, and I've spoken to him, you know, relatively recently, not since all this happened, obviously, but to Bob Murray, and how Bob Murray thinks of the Stadium of Light. He calls it, you know, a cathedral. And I can only imagine what he must have thought when he saw the pictures and, you know, heard what was happening at the ground that, you know, was his sort of vision for the club. I just can't imagine for the life of me what possessed people to do this. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. Why the club went to the lengths that it did, why this was allowed to happen. I mean, let's be clear. This isn't a decision that's been taken by some lowly underling, some junior manager somewhere. This has been signed off at a very high level. You know, quite how high, you know, you can probably imagine how high to get this done. So somebody somewhere has sanctioned this at a very high level. As ever, whether it will be the person that actually sanctioned it that pays the price, that very rarely happens. In fact, you know, I'd be very surprised if the person that's responsible actually is the one that pays the price come the end. But yeah, I just don't understand it. I can understand why it's bad enough that from Sunderland fans' point of view, that Newcastle fans were given the north stand lower, and season ticket holders were displaced as a result. Bad enough that Newcastle fans were admitted to the Black Cats Bar and, you know, were able to pay for those seats. But given that happened, I can understand why it might have been a wise decision to cover up the Sunderland slogans and such have you in the Black Cats Bar, partly for provocation reasons and partly to avoid damage and vandalism. So I can understand there's an argument for that. But why you would decorate it with Newcastle slogans, why you would allow that, why you would allow that to happen, is just beyond all belief. I mean, what was Sunderland thinking? Did they think that Newcastle fans that were there on Saturday might think, well, this is quite nice, this, think I might come back against Hull? You know, what was the thinking behind it?
Being kind of best, they possibly thought there would just be like a few generic black and white stuff, but that actually brought in, like, you know, stuff criticized, like the spelling change from our version of Hawaii to their version of Hawaii. That image is now around forever. And again, we said for you, this was what we were trying to say, the careful what you're going to do here, because these images are around forever. This is a legacy now.
It'll come up every year. It'll come up exactly. Every derby. You know, that will not go away. That will not be forgotten. It's, you know, the result will pass because there'll be other derbies and other results. But the images that are out there will be out there forever. And they will always rebound on the club and on the on the people that are responsible, and that's something they're going to have to live with. But it's not something they're going to have to live with. It's something that Sunderland fans are going to have to live with, unfortunately. That's the issue.
It's the whole cliche again about, you know, owners are just custodians, all that kind of thing. When you take a decision. The decision that they've taken, you have to bear that in mind. And I think it just, you know, goes to show that the people generally in charge of the club, have absolutely no idea about the people who they charge to go and watch their business venture, which is
Sunderland
essentially
fans on the
what
board,
it
Gareth.
is.
Sunderland fans on the
Oh, I
board.
know. I mean, that's a different discussion. I just think for, if I mean, off the top of my head, you kind of thinking back, the variety of putting season ticket prices up without telling anybody, sending a communication out thanking certain season ticket holders, initially when Louis Dreyfus took over, to then 18 months later or a year later discovering actually he isn't the majority shareholder at the club, so immediately you've been liberal with the truth at that point. Why should we believe that he did or didn't know about anything at that? Moving forward after that, anything he says could be literally taken with a pinch of salt. There's been so many of these little incidents.
Moving everything digital when you don't have the capacity to deal with
No,
everything, when you don't
not
have the capacity to
communicating.
deal with everything digitally. Did you see the queues all week outside the ticket office? Like queues out the door because people weren't emailed. It's natural, like we say, I'm perfectly fine with using my season ticket digitally. It's not, and this is not new what we're talking about now. But it's just something that, I saw with my own eyes this week because people like my wife hadn't been emailed at or any information about where her ticket had gone. So we didn't know if it was, because some people were being told it was put on the card and some people were being told they'd been emailed it. So we didn't know. And if you're going to move your entire operations online, then you need to make sure you're ready, you can cope and you've got the means to cope with that. And that includes replying to emails for a start.
I mean, this is it. I mean, the club's hierarchy, in general, not to absolutely everybody, but basically, it's reflective of the club as a whole. So, how many times do we hear, Michael Beale and before him, Tony Mowbray, and they would say, it's a young team. They're going to make mistakes. They'll get better. They'll develop. Well, I'm afraid it's the same with the hierarchy. I mean, Kirill's, only young himself. He's young, he's inexperienced, and he's making mistakes. But you can't do that with a business like Sunderland, because the mistakes you make have lasting consequences, like the Black Cat's Bar, like the cashless stadium. All right, fair enough. Cashless is coming. We all know that, but it's how you implement it, how you execute it. It's the same with the digital tickets. It's how these things are done. And while there might be people within the club that are flagging up problems and saying, look, you need to do, ultimately, it's the owner that has the final call on all these matters. And if he's not listening or doesn't want to listen or whatnot, then that's fine. If he doesn't want to listen to his advisors, then that's fine. But then you have to hold your hands up and make it clear that these are your decisions and not someone else's. And that's basically where Sunderland are. They are making big mistakes, but it's the fans that are paying the
But
price for
the thing
that.
is, though,
And
that they're not making mistakes. It's a mi the getting caught is the mistake.
yeah.
It's not like they're going, oh God, I never thought that if we redecorated the Black Cat's Bar in Newcastle colours and put offensive slogans against the team that they're playing and the fiercest rivals, it would upset people. I didn't realise that. I didn't know what was happening. It's literally it's the it push it to the point.
Let's
You
not
know,
reply to any emails. It's fine.
it's they just push it to the point where on the backlash gets to this the point where they have to do something. And it's just a continual thing. We've seen it. It happened with the club shop, some of the ticketing. They'll try and implement as much as they possibly can to the point where people, there's a tipping point and people get annoyed and then they apologize, probably sack somebody and then go, oh, we'll not do that again. And then they're all right, let's crack on and do the next bit. And they will do that repeatedly. And It's to me, it's I just from top to bottom, I do feel as though that, and I've said this about other areas of the club from the play on the playing side as well as off the pitch, that you know they we're taken for morons. You know, we pay our money, we're going, we're sold this idea that everything's going to be wonderful because of this. Well, I've said this before, that I've got no real interest in. Well, it's not going to satisfy me if we sell Jack Clarke for 25 million quid. I don't care. Like, well, I'm not going to see 20 for any of that 25 million quid. You know, the money that they've made in the stadium at the weekend by charging people 500-600 pound a ticket for a ticket in the Black Cats bar. I'm not going to see any of that. So why do I care that? Oh, great! Oh, well, well done, the club. They've ripped the mags off. It's like, well. No, actually, we've been sold down the river as a fan base, as a football club, as you know, the thing that means the most to a lot of people has been used as a pawn for somebody else to make a financial, you know, make the benefit financially, and you're not going to see any of that. So, why do you care about that? I just don't understand.
And the thing is now, like people say, oh, he's young and he's making a mistake, and I get that, but it was needless. Like it's you shouldn't be
Oh, yeah,
making these mistakes. They
I'm
should have,
not.
like, you know,
Yeah.
how tone deaf is this whole thing been? It can't. It's unacceptable. Like I've said before, like I think the kid supports Marseille. Would he have allowed this to happen there? And let's be honest, no is the answer.
Sorry, let me make it clear. When I say young and inexperienced and making mistakes, I'm not offering that up as a defence.
No,
I'm just
I didn't know what I
I'm
was doing.
more I'm more saying that I'm more saying that you know, he's inexperienced, so he needs to listen to people that are more experienced. You know, I would think that, you know, I'm looking at the three of us here on this podcast as we're talking now. If someone at the club would have picked up the phone and said, Gareth, Stephen, James, this is what we're thinking of doing for the derby about the ticket arrangements. What do you think?
Well,
Like,
it's, yeah.
we'd go, that's ridiculous. Don't do it. You're in a world of hurt if you do that. And then they go, oh, right, okay. I think I'm going to do it anyway. And then we said, right, okay, well, if you do that, are you happy to put your name personally to it? Say, I was advised not to do this, but I am overruling that, and I took this decision. And then they go, oh, actually, no, I'm not too sure if I did want to put my name to it. So in that case, don't do it. Don't do it, you know, because you could see with the statement about the Black Cats bar, there was a very definite attempt straight away to put distance between the ownership group and board of directors and the decision, as though somebody else had made the decision and, whew, well, this is news to us, you know. Yeah, absolute nonsense. You know, anyone who knows how Sunderland works, anything that involves money, anything that involves any form of payment whatsoever, has to be sanctioned, you know, at the top of the tree. It doesn't, it's not left to somebody else. But these are basic things that any Sunderland fan or anybody associated with the football club in any way, could look at and say, this is a problem. This is not going to end well. And I can't understand why, they don't take that advice on board. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there's any number of people that work within the football club that could tell them that this was going to pan out this way. So why
Exactly.
do it? Why do it? And I get the idea about making as much money as they can off it. All right, yeah, fair enough. But there has to be some limits to that. You don't just say, well, you know, we want to make as much money as we can and we'll sell our soul to the devil to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you say we want to make as much money as we reasonably can, but there are limits. You know.
And if somebody like sort of said, you know, all is bad plus bad publicity and bad and ill feeling they've now caused. However it is they've made off this, and you know, whether that's Newcastle giving gate receipts or whatever, I don't know. Whatever Chris has mentioned, that I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
He'll be doing something on it for the site. Whatever that cost has been, is it worth
Yeah.
it? And if somebody had offered them the chance to pay that kind of money to make all this go away, I bet they would.
Yeah, yeah. I
Whatever it is
mean,
they've made.
I mean, if the Newcastle fans are in the Black Cats bar and, you know, they covered up the Sunderland branding for the game, and they'd said, "I tell you what, we're going to do. We're gonna make it 20 quid a pint for the people that are in there, then that's one way to make a lot of money out of it. But not to do it the way that they've done it is it's just completely wrong. And there's no amount of excuses or internal reviews or scapegoating of somebody that's going to make that right, that's going to make it all okay and make Sunderland fans go, oh, well, fair enough then. It's just not going to happen.
Give them free
And don't
pints,
forget
James.
that
They didn't
when it.
charge them
Oh,
20 quid.
yeah.
They
Yeah.
gave them free pints.
Yeah. And even when it comes to, even when it comes to the gate receipts, yeah, okay, Sunderland will have made decent money off the back of the game, but it's still got to be split three ways. Still, it goes a third to Sunderland, a third to Newcastle, and a third to the FA. So you only make a third of whatever you make anyway. So it still gets split three ways.
Yeah, I'll let
So it's not even as though you keep
people
the
are better
lot as
qualified
your
than me
own.
come out and say whether that's actually happening or not. I don't want to spec because I would be guessing and speculating on it. But I think, but even the free pint, it's so for those who don't know, one of the teas after the match, I would argue after the match you don't serve them alcohol. They've got to wait until they get on the buses. Why are you offering a service to them? Again, must be money orientated. But apparently, what happened is Wi-Fi went down or something. It's a cashless now, as you know. So they couldn't physically take cash from people. I'll tell you what, we'll just give them for free and just give them pints and food for free. So they've just come. We've rolled out the red carpet for them to come from start to finish. We mentioned the images are going to be around there forever, including that one where they're doing a celebration in front of our stand and you can see our flags that are permanently something that makes our stadium stand out from others in a way. That's in the background. That's stuck there forever. They've done all that. They've won the game. And then they've given them free drink and free food. This now is stuck. This is a black marker in our history, as far as I'm concerned. And they've only got themselves to blame, James, as you say, because there are plenty of people that could have picked the phone up too and
Yeah.
said and got it. But
Well,
I just I'm just without trying to like
what's
name
the
people and
well.
stuff like that as well. I just there are enough Sunderland fans on the board who surely aren't that detached from where we are and from reality that much, where they couldn't have spoke up. The whole thing is just, it's just confusing. It's deeply disappointing. I feel so let down by them. Like I feel really, really gutted and let down by them over this.
I do as well. I feel the same. Obviously, you feel it as fans. I feel it for the fans. I think that they've been massively let down by the hierarchy in the run up to this game from, virtually from the moment the draw was made. And I think that they've been let down, on the pitch, but to a lesser degree. I mean, that's a sporting matter.
Yeah,
That's
that's it.
different.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
different. That happens, but, if this was one game in isolation and it was the first time they put a foot wrong, that's one thing. But we all know that there have been multiple feet put wrong multiple times in the past. This is just the worst and most egregious example. And it's the one that will resonate for years to come. Whenever the anniversary of this game comes, whenever the next derby comes, it will be produced again and again and again. And that's, as I say, it's just unforgivable, isn't it?
I think there were signs that this game's lost its edge. I thought it's a sign of things to come.
In terms
I
of.
don't it just because you're mentioning about like when this game comes up and stuff like that. And yes, it's there wasn't as much needle beforehand and stuff because they were bubble tripped in. So like the fans were kept apart, et cetera, et cetera. But I just could not believe. And this is not a cheap shot. It's just a fact. I just could not believe how quiet the Newcastle fans were, for example, when they're winning a derby 2-0, because I've seen them before when they've turned us over and they make the whole thing even more uncomfortable by every minute because they're so loud and boisterous and they're gloating and they're just. I remember at Roker Park, I'm taking the whole Roker end when Liam O'Brien scored a free kick, and it's still I've never probably seen the way support like that ever again, like since. But it's impacted by the result. Sunderland are losing the game 2-0, and you just didn't get that. The Sunderland fans kept going and kept going and kept going, and trying to get behind the team. And I just think is this the sign of what's to come? Because that's going to only get more sanitized. Is as time goes on, because they are, whether we get to where we think we should be again, with the financial backing they've got, you can only see them just edging further and further and further. Even if that does mean we get promoted and we play them more regularly again, and that has to impact. It's not, you know, that I think, and that would happen to most teams. You know what I mean? It's not even me. So I'm trying not trying to like have this as like a cheap shot to them personally. This is what happens. This is what Man City fans are like now.
I mean,
They've gone from being like one of the best, most revered fan bases in the country to being crap, basically. It's a
I mean,
fact.
it is interesting, Stephen, and there were lots of things that came out of the game that you know seemed odd to me. It was the first time, obviously, that I've seen a derby where the two teams were operating at different levels.
It's the only time it's ever happened.
Is that right?
Ever.
So, I mean, obviously,
Only time it's
I
ever
know they played in
happened.
the League Cup. Were they in the same league time, same
Yeah.
league when they were in the League Cup together? Right. Okay. Fair enough. Right. Well, there you go. So, this was very much a fearful derby because, from Sunderland fans' point of view, there was the possibility they might have got a real good hiding. You know, that could easily have happened. From Newcastle's point of view, there was the fear factor that, you know, if they'd have lost against Sunderland, you know, it would have been talked about forevermore. So, you know, there was a much more of a sense of fear, I thought, in this derby than even in a normal derby. And normally, derbies are more about, you know, trying not to lose than trying to win. But that was ever more the case this time. I think it was, and I think you could see the relief at the final whistle. I mean, Newcastle did the thing at the end, didn't they, with the selfie in front of the way end. Now, you know, I know that's a Newcastle thing. That's something that they've started to do.
Not
But
on the pitch.
what an odd way to celebrate making the fourth round of the FA Cup. That's how non-league teams celebrate at Anfield if you knock Liverpool out or somebody. That's not how a Premier League team celebrates having knocked a Championship
That when
team
they put
out
a
of the
front on
cup.
that they don't care about Sunderland or anything, which is the front they
That
always put on.
that's the thing, you know. Like if you're the big club and if you see yourself as the big club in the relationship, you walk away from the derby and you shrug your shoulders and say, well, you know, another day at the office. You don't make a massive thing of it. Do you know what I mean? That's how what didn't quite chime right for me. It showed the relief at having ended that run of 9 games without a win. It showed the relief at, you know, at what was it, 7 defeats in 8 with Eddie Howe sort of walking a tightrope. It was a this, in my opinion, Newcastle saw that as a bullet dodged, as much as anything. As much as a 3-0 win, it was a bullet dodged.
Do you feel, Gareth, you've suffered defeats to Newcastle before as a fan? Have you ever felt less bothered by one than this?
I think
Take aside what
more,
Sunderland have done, because I'm furious about that
yeah,
still.
that that's
And
that's
that's the gut
more.
punch. Yeah. Forget about
I
that.
think
Forget about that. The
you know,
actual result.
I was expecting to lose the game,
Yeah,
so
but I always expect to
but
lose
in a
those
dip, but
games.
I know, but it in when you're in the same division and you're playing the, you know, you're playing a league game, and you've got players of a similar standard. You got a chance, haven't you? Like to win the game with quality, whether you've got quality players in your team, like top level players. You know, you might think, "Oh God, we're going to lose," and it'll because it'd be horrible to lose, and you kind of try and make your peace. This was different because you go and they're so far away from us at the moment in terms of, you know, quality of player, and everything that goes with that. It was like we could play this game 10 times and we'd lose 9 of them. So I was prepared for it. I was kind of looking half an hour going, well, it's nil nil. I mean, they've done all right. From a defensive perspective, but it just kind of felt like it was coming from kickoff. Do you know what I mean? It was just like we were completely, you know, a yard behind them everywhere. So, but I expected that. So, like you say, I was more, I think I've just felt low after the game just because of everything. It's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like a yardstick, isn't it? Moment in the histories of the two clubs. And it was kind of like all the chickens coming home to roost. Inviting them all to watch it, to watch us be humiliated in that fashion, in so many respects. To me, it was, regardless of the football, it just felt like a real, don't know, like foot on throat sort of moment where it's like you lot know your place now almost, and look at us, and how they've got there, is a debatable point, and I've got my opinions on the vast majority of their supporters, some of the people who I've respect for who involved in sort of media and sort of things like this that we do, just got zero respect for them because the way they went on over Mike Ashley and stuff like that, all the principles that apparently held at that point have just been proven to be entirely disingenuous because it's all centered around the level of entitlement that they have, the superiority complex that they've always had over the City of Sunderland. You ask any sort of person from that part of the world mention about going to Sunderland, and all of a sudden they turn into, Enoch Powell or something like that, the way they go on. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, for me, I've just got, I think it's just it was a lot of stuff coming together yesterday, and it kind of felt like a lot of that could have been avoided. But however, we actually just invited it on. We gave ourselves a worst chance
Played up to the
possible of,
narrative, was yeah, the
we gave
talking.
ourselves a worst chance possible of doing, of avoiding that scenario. And when it said, we actually actively encouraged it, and it's just minging. Like, it's just horrible. I just think, I just feel like it almost feels a bit like a real, like, sort of paradigm shift in football, sort of laid bare on the pitch, like, and off the pitch. And you think about people talking about the bubble bursting 20 years ago and money coming into the
But this is what
game
I'm
and.
saying. This is what I felt like. This, but I felt like this derby was like that for me. I felt like I walked away from this thing, and we have lost. We've lost the derby now. I feel like we've lost it. I don't feel like it's
Yeah,
ever going
I
to.
did
I
say
don't
that
feel like it's
before. I
going
just said that
to
before.
come
It just doesn't feel, it's not a football match. It doesn't feel like a football match anymore. It's
But this was. But this was. What I'm. I get that on the pitch and stuff, and it's only getting worse. But I just. It was just amplified even further just by them on the day. Just so never what I wanted to be like. Felt belittled by Newcastle fans and felt intimidated. But it was just in a way you kind of do because like a derby. I don't know. But
I
the
mean,
thing is, Camilla.
we're humiliated in a different way, and it was worse than that, and it was worse than that.
I think. I mean,
I
like
think
on an
when
opposite
it's
level.
friendly fire, when it's your own side that, and you know, it's one thing, taking on fire, but when some, it's a bit like, forget what the quote was now, but when they're talking about Margaret Thatcher being sent out to bat when someone's, when the captain of your team's broken your bat, when it's your own side that's done the damage to you, which Sunderland had in the build-up, there was no sense of going into the game on a on a high in an attempt to create the most hostile environment, that's reasonable in a derby, and creating a shock. It was very much a case that Sunderland felt like they'd shot themselves in the foot before they even started.
A couple of things on I want to say that have been like frustrating me over it. Cheer Peter Reid's not an insult. Stop saying that. People need to stop saying that. The cheer Peter Reid thing was always there in the Black Cats bar because it's a pro positive Sunderland thing. Stop saying it. They reworded the song and they didn't say cheer Peter Reid, believe me. It was different word, a different two words that they used for that. So that's just one thing that's been annoying us a little bit because that's been held up as an example. And the other one is, and I think there are a few defenders of the club left. There are a few though, who will say that about giving Newcastle a low team in the 6,000. But the SAG said it was okay. Don't be naive about this. The police didn't want them to give this allocation. I promise you, they didn't. However, the minutes may be signed off and dressed up. I don't know. Let's see if they ever come to the light. But the SAG will always find a way to say, yes, let's make it happen. You can always make these things happen. Don't be naive that clubs, when they play their rivals, find a way for it not to happen. That's a difference. So they can say Newcastle funded everything and the SAG have said it could be safe, so we've found a way to do it. But once the police say, our advice is that you don't do this, that is enough for a club to say, okay, taking police advice, my hands are tied. We're not going to do anything about it. Don't be naive, think otherwise. Leeds, Borough have we've drawn those teams in the cup, and we've not done it for them. When you look
Just
at other teams
to be
like Man
clear,
United and other clubs like that, they won't do it to the biggest rivals. They won't. They will say, yeah, the police have said no, so we are saying no.
Steve,
So don't buy that.
if they'd have said at the outset, sorry, we can't do that because we've got season ticket holders sitting there, that was all they needed to say. That's not possible. You
I know.
know.
I mean, there's an element of that happening in cup games, though, when you see like bigger allocations, like even you see that at Anfield sometimes, a spread behind that goal a little bit more. But the difference is they wouldn't do it for certain teams. They would find a way to say no. And once the police have said, we don't think this is a good idea, that should be enough.
Well, what you do is you simply say that I'm not moving my season ticket holders, so that area is going to have to be mixed, and then the police will go, nope. And that's that. And end of discussion. You say, I'm not moving my season ticket holders, and the police then say, there's no way it can be mixed. And then you say, right,
And
that's it then.
also, we've lost 4,000 off the gate because of the empty seats to segregate the fans. So that's another, like, it's not a reasonable adjustment. You say no because we're losing income by doing this. No. Yeah. So that's another thing. But they'll hide behind that again when they have the next meeting with Red and White Army, I'm sure.
Well, I think there's been a meeting called Thursday this week, I think.
But you feel
So
sorry for them in a way because what they're going to say, they're not going to come out and just say, right, hold our hands up. But yeah, we made a bad decision. We sold out. They're going to come back and they're going to spin all that stuff and say, the SAG, our hands are tied. They've said we could allow 6,000. That's what they're going to say. And that's a frustrating thing because you can't make them say otherwise, can you?
I mean, the thing, they said, it says in the statement from Red and White and Army on that they like, your analogy of pick up the phone and ask somebody, they weren't engaged. It would have been a very short conversation, I think. It would have taken about a minute to say, do you think this is a good idea? And they would have gone collectively, no, this is a terrible idea.
It's like people when people fear that they're going to get an answer they don't want, then
It's
they don't ask the question.
absolutely. Well, they know that and just say what they need to say at the end. Say sorry. Throw some people under the bus, and then people will be back on board. And this is the problem that. See, I'm not having to go at Sunderland fans. It's just I think generally so. But we're loyal and we'll back people, to do because we feel as though that we can't envisage a situation where they're not acting in our best interests, and then by the time it comes apparent that they're not, it's too late. The
This is the
damage has always
biggest.
been done,
This is the
and
biggest.
then we just rinse and repeat. It's the same every time. People are allowed to ask questions. People are allowed to say, maybe this is a bit iffy. You don't have to like go, actually, they didn't have a choice because there are these unbelievable people who like they get the club and all this. It's like, no. They'll never, they, if there's ever an example that an owner has never gotten a club, it is what has happened in the last fortnight.
Well, this is a big test, isn't it? This is the biggest test that I can think of in my time covering the club, where, an owner, or certainly one of the biggest tests, probably the biggest test of how Sunderland fans react to this. In the past, the club has done various things which fans have, moved on from, but this, given the context of the game and the opposition. It'll be interesting to see whether the club is able to just, move along, nothing to see, and whether fans will accept that, or whether this has
They
done lasting damage. I don't know.
shouldn't be allowed. They shouldn't be allowed. They just move on. They should
Well,
be
that'll be a thing.
answerable.
That'll
You
be a
can't
thing.
just say
That'll be a thing
sorry.
for. That'll be a thing for the fans themselves to decide
Yeah.
as a, you know, as a collective, as to whether they're prepared to accept a sorry and you know, and move on, or whether they're not prepared to let it drop.
Well, from my perspective, I'll never forgive them for what they've done.
Well, a historical summary of this now is that Sunderland fans who set up a display were told they couldn't bring in anti-Newcastle messages after that was initially signed off, yet they encouraged Newcastle to bring in anti-Sunderland slogans. That it's a very simplistic way of looking at it. That's a fact.
Do you know what it is? Well, I just want to comment on the Spirits 37, the fans group. Now, people will have other opinions either way on them or whatever, and the people involved, or I don't know. Ultimately, it's a group of people who've come together to try and do something. Now, you might not always agree with the way that they've gone about it, but I think, you know, when I think about some of the displays that we've had, like the first playoff semi-final with the cat's eyes and stuff like that. Honestly, that was a after being in League One for such a long time, that was like the first time I actually thought this is Sunderland. Like, you forget who we are, and it gave us our identity back a bit, to be honest. And I thought, you know, and they've had done some stuff where some people have been well received, but I just think, like, obviously they're not going to bother anymore. They've been scrutinized and questioned about the money that's been spent by people who've donated off their own back. And you know, I've seen them getting dragged more than the people who've like
Probably
created the
by
problems
people who
at the
haven't
club.
donated, to be honest.
Exactly. But I just think generally it's like, you know, you're questioning these people over 17 grand when they've, and then they have to like provide, you know, evidence to like kind of prove it. And it's like some of the stuff that's gone on at the club off the pitch, and people, just these people who are passing through, have got no affinity for the club whatsoever. You know, get away with murder and don't have a question asked to them. And if anybody asks a question, people like jump in front of the bullets for them.
I
It's
don't,
just it's just a bizarre mentality. It's
yeah.
just a bizarre mentality. I don't
Yeah.
understand it. I don't understand it. Sometimes you just say, you know, you talk about shooting yourself in both feet. It feels like we're outstanding at it. I'm surprised we've got any feet left.
I think, you know, I mean, I've just seen what's been said about Spirit of 37 today, and, you know, I'd be sad if they come to a stop, because I do enjoy the you know, the pre-match displays. I do think they add something to the game. Not every single one is an absolute hit. You know, there have been ones where you've looked at it and it's not quite worked. It's probably not worked in the way that the Spirit of 37 wanted it to work. They thought some things would work and it didn't. Fair enough, you can't get everything right all the time. But the one that you mentioned, the cat's eyes, the one ahead of the derby, you know, on Saturday, I thought looked good. You know, there have been, you know, the Poppy remembrance displays have also looked excellent. You know, and I do think they add something. I have no idea what it costs to dress up a stadium like that. I wouldn't know how to put a price on it. So, you know, I honestly, genuinely, I've no idea about the financial side of it. And there are others better qualified to talk about that than me. But I'd just be sad if volunteers that have put themselves forward to do something to improve the atmosphere and the build up to games, if that, you know, Sunderland fans themselves, if that fell by the wayside.
I mean, you've got probably like, I don't know how many people are involved. You can probably count them on one hand. And then somebody organising that, liaising with an actual professional organisation. You try to do that in your spare time. I mean, and then you've got to get a load of people to come in to help you. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that those pictures, those pictures of the Black Cats Bar probably would have emerged on the day of the game had those people not been in the stadium, but in the setting up. You're talking about volunteers working 2 or 3 days to go in and put a display up. It must be quite disheartening. I'm not surprised they jacked it in. It must be quite disheartening to do that and just see people slamming you from all angles for a variety of different reasons. It just feels a bit harsh, really. I just think, like, people, you know, sometimes people try and do something positive. They don't always get it right, but you know, There's a lot of plenty of people who'll sit there sniping from the sidelines and not do anything themselves. So I just think it'll be a shame if it ends. And if it does end, I hope somebody else, picks up the baton and decides that they've got the time and effort and energy and enthusiasm to do it, because I think it has added something to those big games. Like the ship one for the first championship game back was great. I thought that looked out really outstanding. I thought, I
Just
just think it's
imagine,
sad.
like, imagine sitting through that derby match and through the week leading up to it and everything that's gone on, and to somehow think that the displayers, the people who you should start, the display organizers, the people you should be angry at and start shouting at, mental. Have a rethink, lads. Go away. Have a think. And just yeah. Well, not really much else to add. Unless anybody else has got anything, another burning issue they would like to bring up. No, as
I'm
always,
sure there'll be
James.
one. I'm sure there'll be another one next week.
Yeah, there'll be loads of stuff
Yeah,
next week. Always a pleasure to have you on, James. You know that.
thank you very much. Lovely to be here, chaps. Thank you very much.
Aye. And as always, thanks for listening.